Good evening, Mr. Sim.
Good evening.
The last time when we were speaking, you were speaking about Sicily.
Yes.
And you were just about to depart company from the Gordons.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you ask to get moved out of the Gordons, or did they just move you?
Yes and no. I went down to the 8th Army headquarters, you know, to help guard the General Montgomery's headquarters, you know, as a wee bit of token of his appreciation of the fighting us, or so it was said to us. And it's when I was there, I met them with chaps who had been in another unit who had served with them previously. So we got a transfer to them. You know, they were what they call a reconnaissance unit, which I'd had. So that was how I managed to leave the Gordons. That was when I was down at 8th Army headquarters.
And these other men, had they been Gordon Highlanders, or were they just...
Yeah, some of them had been, but that they had been transferred a good while ago, you know. So that was part of my changeover, shall we say.
And was it easy to transfer, or was it difficult? You know, was it...
No, it wasn't. No, it went through quite easily, you know, at... as far as I can remember now, you know. Yeah.
And was it a few of you, or did you just go yourself?
Just myself, yes, at this time, yeah. At this particular time, just myself, yeah.
And so did you still wear the same battle dress and
yes,
everything?
Yes, the same battle dress and everything. Safe guard badge and that. It was what they called sort of, maybe not transferred, but attached. That was the word they used, attached.
Did you get papers? Did they send you papers that you were getting?
No, well, it may have been. I don't remember any papers being signed, so there probably was, but the exact papers I don't remember and as such. So it just went through and that was it, more or less. The Gordons went home, you know, and I remained in Sicily, and that was how it went, you know.
And was this still in 1943?
Yes, this was still 1943, yeah.
Okay. And had you any more training to do, or different training to
do? No, not really, no. I put it in. I'd had previous experience of this type of warfare, or training, as you may say, so I fit it in quite well.
And what kind of thing had you to do now that you were in the reconnaissance?
Well, we were more mobile. We had what they called reconnaissance cars and Bren gun carriers. You know, it was a very mobile unit, more so than infantry, you know. And this was it.
And what was your job within this new unit?
Well, just a trained soldier and a machine gunner, you know, and that... yeah, perhaps you had more map reading to do and compass work, etc. So I fitted in all right.
So where did you meet up with this unit? Where about did you meet them?
In Sicily, you know, they were in a different division, you know, but we had met when I was back at the 8th Army headquarters, you know.
Okay. So... where did you go from Sicily? Did you remain in Sicily a while?
No, I went into Italy, you know, and just travelled up Italy and that with this unit and remained with it nearly the end of the war, you know. So I went out quite happily, you know.
Do you remember where you landed in Italy?
Well, I've been in the Messina and the Reggio Calabria, I think, would have been that part of Italy. It's right in the toe of Italy, you see. Not much change from Africa, I must say, at that particular time, you know.
And when you say that, what do you mean?
The lifestyle of the inhabitants and their working ways, you know. They were still very, well, there was very little mechanisation in the farms in those days, you know. But they seem to be a wee bit further behind, you know.
Were the locals friendly enough to you?
Oh yes, they were quite friendly. Don't leave us alone, you know. Laguera finito. As far as they were concerned, they didn't want any part in it. Just leave them in peace. So that was That's how I saw it, you know. But you know, Tedeschi was a name from the Germans, you know, what the Italian was from German. Niente buono, so no good, no good. But anyway, that was typical of them once they had gone out of the chain of tune, so we say. And so that was it. And well, we had a halt. Mount Vesuvius, as we were talking up, we got Mount Vesuvius erupted, you know, and it was quite a bad winter at that time, you know. And troops held up at Cassino and Zetra, and so on. So anyway, it was a slow slog up Italy.
And with the volcano erupting, did that affect you any?
Well, inasmuch it made you inconvenient, you know, made life a wee bit more miserable, you know. You had this volcano eruption and the lava creeping down, and it got dusty, muddy and dusty. So that was for how it inconvenienced you, you know. It just slowed things down.
And were you having, were you seeing the enemy at this time?
Yes, you were still in contact at that time. Oh yes, they were affected with it also at the same time. But with the result that when you're attacking people, it's always that be a bit harder, you know, although they were retreating at the same time. So, well, we thought they always putting up a stiff fight, you know. Resistance was stiff. So that was how we went on. And then the winter passed, you know. Cassino got bombed, the monastery, there was a great discussion in higher in political circles. Will they or will they not bomb the casino, the monastery? And eventually they had to bomb it. But it didn't do much good. The German troops, you know, the underground, in the dungeons part of the monastery, they made good defences. So with the result that the troops were hardly touched. And that, although the monastery was, you know, badly messed up.
Were you anywhere near Monte Cassino?
Yes, not all the time. I had a wee spell there, you know.
Well, you were at Monte Cassino?
Yes, but as I said, we were moved around a bit, so you couldn't have been, well, some folks may have been there all the time, but for my part, we weren't. You see.
And which division were you in then?
That one? A sort of mixed division that was between the 78th and the 56th, no, that one. So that's part of it. And then, of course, they were moved from different sectors, depending how hard the fighting was, you know.
And were you involved in any of the fighting at Monte Cassino?
No, you were sometimes, you were there. We didn't involve a great deal in the fight, depending on the time. It was stalemate for a while, with the result that when you went there, you may have been there like on a watching brief, you know, ready to, you know, repel an attack, or vice versa, or keep a watching brief and things, you know. So, and at that time it was quiet. It wasn't until after getting near the spring that an offensive was launched to get. And by this time, a Polish division had come on the scene, you know, so my memory was they put in the final attack and Cassino. Mm-hmm. We moved over onto the Adriatic side, more the Adriatic side.
And were they like allies? Were they blockading Cassino? You know, were the Germans getting supplies through, or were they?
Oh yeah, they were getting supplies because their lines had not been broken. You know, they're still in communication. They weren't cut off by any means. Angio was a move trying to cut off the Germans, but it failed a wee bit too until they were able to break through it. And then by this time the Allies had broken through at Cassino about the same time, you know. So with the result, the Germans made a hasty retreat, you know, beyond Rome, because they moved well up into central of Italy. And I think it was the Germans called it the Gustav Line, you know.
I was in Cassino last year.
Were you?
But of course, obviously, there's no fighting. And I just thought that, you know, like all the Allies and that would have been round the bottom. But of course, the Germans would have probably still been getting in from the other
That's
side.
That's right. They were up on top of the hill and we were down below. That's right. Yeah, they could see everything and they're shelling and that, you know, you're getting... Then you got shelled every day. You usually got shelled, usually in the morning, you know, at dawn, and the same at night. And just to let you know that we were still there. And then they usually occasionally go on fire during the day, you know. But you hear the shells coming screaming at you, you know, the terror.
And how did you manage to protect yourself at times like
that? Well, you dug in. We dug... what you call a slit trench, you know, the Americans call them foxholes, but we just made a slit trench. Or if something's got into a building, you know, and sort of give you shelter from the elements at the same time, something's a slit trench, unless you get bits of scrap, you know, got to get a tire in or something to put a roof over your head, you're out in the open a lot, you know.
And were you getting supplies okay?
Well, we were, the Allies had made some ports, like Bari was one, not Naples, but before they got to Naples, you know, they were always coming up through Messina, you know, they were in that port. So, yes, the lines of communication, I suppose, on both sides were good, quite reasonable, you know. So you got your supply through quite good.
And how much information were you getting at that point? Did you know what was happening at Anzio and things like that?
Well, at one time the army were able to print a sheet of paper with basic news. It started off the 8th Army News. And then after we got into Sicily, we started getting what they called, they changed the name to the Union Jack. Still a one-page effort, you know. But you got the basic news maybe a couple of days late. But never mind, you were sort of being kept up to date. Well, not up to date, but kept informed. Not a lot, but enough to keep you happy, maybe.
So you were finding out what was happening in other areas?
Yes, I... One incident that always got a lot of mention was the Patton, the General Patton incidents, when he was visiting wounded soldiers in the hospital, and it's a good thing he met the wounded soldiers, and how I get a chap with his leg off, you know, or how do you get that one, Agrigento or someplace, you know, never mind, sir, we'll get you home, you'll get your Purple Heart, you know, and so on. The next one, he came along with flesh wound in his arm, you know. Oh, we'll soon get you back into your unit, sir, and your soldiers, and you'll get your Purple Heart too, you know. And he kept the chap, you know, standing, no bandages on him. And what's wrong with you, soldier? Bad exhaustion, sir, and he lost his temper, and he slapped this soldier. You know, they used to wear gloves after carried them, slapped him in the face, you know. Get this dog on. I won't use the expression, but the Americans had a good, real rough expression for that, so. And he used this expression, and get him out of my command right now, immediately. And that was the last of Patton's promotion prospects. Got a lot of headline news in this paper, the Union Jack paper, you know. And although I didn't actually see it, we were in the theatre of war, you know. And you can visualize what had happened, you know. And Patton had a great reputation, blood and guts Patton. And when he was dressed up for war, you know, he wore holsters, two-gun holsters, well, low down, you know. And he wore white gaiters and a sort of white gun, and there's six guns, you know. Blood and guts Patton. That was him, you know.
In what?
Apparently, him and he... The story went that Montgomery and him didn't see eye to eye, you know. And I won't go into detail with that one. I just been what I had heard.
see, when you were saying that as well, I was thinking as well, you mentioned that you were there like during the winter time.
Yeah.
Did you get any like more clothing or anything?
Yes, we did get winter clothing, you know. You get some extra, you got extra blankets, you know, where it's possible. And at this time, some of the persons didn't get the dirt. It was a mobile bath unit had got up, you know, so that after didn't in the forward areas for some, you were withdrawn and you got a clean change of clothing, complete. It had this semicircular canvas thing and the heated water and it ran into this bath. So it just stripped off, jumped out into this tub, you know, this kind of hot water, you know. Got to give yourself a good wash, came out, dried yourself, and you got clean underwear, and not a new battle dress, but a clean battle dress, you know. Roughly your own size, you know.
Did it feel good?
Eh?
Did it feel good?
Oh, yes, it did. Oh, grimy, you know, how you are after a couple of days. You can imagine after a week or, you know, just, you did have to wash yourself, you know, but not a light wash. And it was good to get all stripped off and jump in, you know. Water was reasonably warm, you know. And usually when you came back, you were into a village or something where there was something sheltered, you know. So that was good, yes. And as the war went on, things got better for us, you know, the change of clothing, better equipment and so on. From what we had before, you know, when you still had a basic and you had to make do with what you had. No, things got better, that's right.
And were you getting supplies okay? You know, like you said, better equipment. Were you getting things like shells and things? Were they all coming through?
Oh, yes, right. Ammunition parties and things, supplies were all coming through. And, yes, things that bothered soldiers most, you know, you got your ration. By this time, we're on to what they called compo rations, which was a better standard of ration than I had had previously, and the compos was quite good, and something we got American rations, you know, which was a bit better too. And things that soldiers wanted was spags. Mostly everyone wanted to get cigarettes, you know, and we got an issue of 50 cigarettes a week, you know, and some boiled sweets, and maybe a bar of chocolate, you know, get that. This came in their compo rations, or I should say the compo, I think the 7 a day you got, and this boiled sweet or a bar of dark chocolate, it wasn't milk chocolate, you know, anyway, it was quite edible, and that, but far just what the soldiers are, and we do put you got a naffy supply, and that's what all you spent your money on, you either got it on credit, the quartermaster, your company would have said, oh, 200 bucks the same, you know, that'll be taken off your pay. And that's what all you spent your money on, you know.
But the cigarettes you got, this 50 that you got,
yeah.
Did you get them for free?
Yes. But the rest you had to buy. And if enough it was good enough, they had a good supply, then you were able to possibly buy another 100 a week, you know. If it was short, then you were down to maybe another 50. But that is it, yes. And the brands, we were getting British brands by this time, you know, getting Senior Service, Capstan, Players, Woodbine, you know, the good brands. Whereas before, we used to get what they called the V cigarette, made in India. And although they smoked, you know, they weren't a good smoke. But they always got this 50 V cigarettes. Well, anyway, that stopped, you know, we're getting better supplies, you know, from the Navy.
And if you didn't smoke, did you get something else instead of cigarettes, or did everybody just...
Oh, I smoked in those days, yes, aye. There was some blokes who didn't smoke, so they were able to make a little bit to themselves, you know, extra money, shall we say, yes. Otherwise, some blokes have my fags, I don't want them, you know, money was not much good to you, really. Some blokes could make money and keep it, but Oh, I don't smoke. I'll have your sweets or something. And that is the point of it. So.
And if when you're saying, you know, that I wasn't much you can do with the money at that point,
because right.
obviously I wasn't sure it's not. Did Indy ever gamble or anything?
Oh, like yes. Given a chance. There was always a school. Not everyone gambled, but there was a little school of blokes who wanted to gamble, you know, just three card brag, solo, pontoon. That's the games they played, and it kept the morale up, you know. And you lost a lot of money at that time, you know, and then you made it up. And some boys won, a lot of people lost too, you see. But yes, gambling frowned upon the army circles, you know, if you're caught in it. But of course, when you're in the front line, you're not worried a great deal. So yes, the gambling went on. Again, some blokes didn't gamble, you know, it didn't appeal to them. But a game of cards was a good pasture time, you know.
And would you generally have a game of cards maybe up at the front line or something if it was quiet?
No, front line, we're not always at each other's throats all the time. Sometimes there's periods of dead quiet and nothing doing for days, you know. And then next time a lot of activity. So during those days it's just quiet, you know, you think, oh, nothing to it. We'll just put one boy out in sentry, you know. They're not usually enough. The rest of you could relax. Sleep was a thing that always bothered. You didn't get a lot of sleep, but any time you stopped, your eyes shut. And at that time, but no, as I said, there were quiet times in the front and you could ease off. We did some, well, you couldn't do actually a lot of physical training. You'd maybe, if you're patrolling or going out on a patrol, then you'd sort of plan out what you would do, you know, roughly. Because you didn't always work and get the groups together, because shells could have wiped you all out. So that basically, that is what life in front line is like, you know. Some days you're at each other's throats, so the next time your days you're dead quiet.
And see, when you were quiet up in the front line as well, you said you'd put out a sentry.
Yes.
Would he be put at one particular point, or
yes,
would he be looking around?
That's right.
Or?
Where you had good visibility, and you wouldn't be standing up, you know, looking, halt, who goes there? You're camouflaged so that from the enemy, so that you're not too conspicuous to be shot at. Yes, it could be a few of you out in sentry, you know, at that time. And so there was that. There was something else I was going to say there. It'll come back to me.
And when you were up at the front line as well, when it was quiet,
yes,
would MD be maybe sitting looking out of the trench or anything with binoculars or anything?
Yes. Well, something you had that, but usually we didn't have many sets of binoculars. The officers of the platoon said, so if you were on the spotting one, you may have been given the binoculars at the take. On the other hand, you would think as something you want a closer look at, then you'd probably get word back to the sergeant and think, there's a lot of activity over there, you know, could you perhaps? So that's how you would do it. Rations, now to get your rations up to you, wasn't always done in daylight, you know, because you made a bit, well, whoever's coming off used to use transport, made a bit of noise, you're big, you're conspicuous, and so maybe during the day, your breakfast might come up before dawn broke, you know, so that they would get by and they'd get a breakfast there. There'd be nothing else for you until darkness. And then the cooks would have had something made. They were behind you, maybe a few miles behind you, and where they would have peace to make a dinner for you. And it would come up at the hours of darkness, usually just at the beginning, in case you were going out on patrols or things at night. So that's how a lot of the movement were taken, no movement during the day at all.
And would the vehicles that did this movement, would they have their lights on, or would
no,
they...
No, 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 no. No, they wouldn't, no lights on, no. Winter time it matter, but what they did have, they perhaps one vehicle in front would be acquainted with the road, or would know it. So on the differential of their vehicle, you know, that's a big, used to be a lump in the middle of the shaft. There would be a white light shining down on it, and you would follow this light of the first vehicle. And a lot of vehicles had their differential lit up. So they would follow one another using that route.
And was there likely to be a lot of men up at the front line at any one time?
Oh, yes, there would have been your companies, a few companies up. So there would be companies, usually working in companies, you know. So there would have been average, well, you're never up to full strength after that. So there would have been about 80, maybe 70, 80 people spread out there. Bunched up in some part of the line, you know.
And would you be up for a while? How long would you be up for generally?
Well, it depended on the situation, you know. If you were winning or that, then you could maybe be relieved, depending on your casualty situation too, you know. So that is, I would say, fortnight, you know. In the forward area. Latterly, as the war moved on, you know, things, it was less. You were, your turnover was a lot quicker.
But a fortnight seems quite a long time. You know, 2 weeks seems quite a long
yes,
time.
Yes, it's quite a long time, that's right, yes. Depending on the weather conditions and so on, and how the enemy, you know, the opposition and that, so.
And if you did have a casualty, you know, someone was hurt
yes.
during daylight, had you just to wait till evening before you got
sometimes
them back?
You had just to wait until the darkness and, you know, tend to them. Well, that's right. If you were severely wounded, a bit hard, you know, at times you had to wait until some medical officer may have, would have been up and around, and he will be on hand, maybe to administer, say, a painkiller or something of that nature. And even attend the wound, you know, he would, if you're bleeding a lot or something, he'd be able to advise how to stop it, you see. And, so, that's, yeah.
Okay, and there was another question. This, is it Combo Russian? Oh, wait, I'll get my teeth in. The Combo Russians?
The Combo, yeah.
Ah, Combo, sorry.
Yeah.
Is that the dried ones? No?
No. Part of it is dried. An example, the box usually came for about a party of 20 men, I think, 20 men's ration. That gave you a breakfast, lunch, and tea, or breakfast, dinner, and a tea meal. And, example, it would be, well, you always had hard biscuits or oatmeal biscuits, you know, it came in to be. Porridge, you've got porridge or cornflakes, you know. milk, and try, I don't know about milk, I don't remember. Oh, yes, they had, you know, carnation milk, condensed milk, you see, like that, evaporated milk. You could get tinned rice. A good dinner one was what they called M&V, made in Fraser Butter, meat and vegetable. You know, it's a tin, and you open it, and that is meat. No, it's just like a stew. And then you got, once I remember, you got tinned rice, you got tinned dumpling, which was very good, you know, right? You had dried tea, you know, and if you had water, which was a separate, it wasn't included in Russia, you had maybe a chance to boil your own water and make tea. So that had been a tea dinner meal, a meat, and then you had tins of soup, which you could have had. Tea was on it consisted, well, cheese was a good standby. Cheese and biscuits.